Welcome to The Rink, your source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tablake Graylian. This week, I'm finally spending some FaceTime with Ryan Classic, a.k.a. Ryan Mance. We're talking goalies, old guys, and more Ron Tugnutt talk than you can shake a puppy at. That'll make a little bit of sense on The Rink. One of the great things about being in Vancouver is I actually get to meet some of the people that I've talked to online and talked to on Twitter and on the rink. And finally, sitting face to face with Ryan Classic, Ryan Mance, a.k.a. Ryan Classic. You know, I actually call you Ryan Classic to everybody rather than your real last name.
I believe you also once gave me a beer cup that had Ryan Classic on it as well.
I did. And did you drink out of it?
No, I drank the one that said James.
Thanks. You know, it's not often that people actually want to be me and try to be in this kind of way, but I appreciate it. I took it as a compliment.
Black Sharpie on a clear cup, not the most easily readable one. You know,
it was backed by Amber Beer, like a light beer. It was a lager. I'm not going to get into it with you. I understand. You were probably just in the back of your mind just thinking, you know what? I don't really care because, you know, at least Martin Gerber isn't in the NHL anymore. I mean, at least our long national nightmare of Martin Gerber as an NHL goalie is over, right? That's probably what you were thinking, right?
A little bit of that. to be honest, though, his last 2 months in the NHL were quite good. After being sent down to the AHL by Ottawa and trade deadline being picked up by Toronto, which caused everybody in the nation's capital to laugh hysterically because nobody in Ottawa wanted Martin Gerber. Nobody wanted Martin Gerber.
Right.
And then Toronto picks him up really just so they could have a goalie to tank with for the rest of the year because Toskola got hurt. So he's Toskola Light.
Toskola Light. And also, of course, Darth Gerber.
Darth Gerber, because while he's, Toskola Light as far as playing, Gerber's prone to throwing a hissy fit or two. And so after Ray Emery took over his job on route to the Cup Finals, where they lost horribly to Anaheim, Gerber demanded a trade.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of doing the typical paint your helmet white or wear the white helmet, he wore the black one because he figured, they're going to get rid of me soon, so I might as well not bother
That's
to do
right.
anything.
I remember that. The plain black helmet.
Oh. And then a funny thing happened. Ray Emery got hurt and didn't come back from injury.
You know, this sounds familiar. Perhaps this season also?
They've got a little bit of a pattern going. So what, Gerber's demanding a trade, and then Emery's hurt, and they have to go with Gerber anyway. They decided to let rookie Brian Elliott play one game against Atlanta, which he won. But then the team went ahead and went 15-2 to start the season, pretty much all on the back of Martin Gerber and a line of Spezza, Alfredson, and Heatley. But Gerber played really well.
When people were still calling them the Cash Line?
The Cash Line. Mm-hmm. The other popular name being the Pizza Line, because at the time, Scotiabank Place had a promotion if the team scored 5 goals or more in a game, everybody get a free slice of pizza.
Gotcha.
Which they later increased to 6 goals a game because that line was causing so many free pizzas.
Nice.
So Gerber got the nickname Darth Gerber and didn't paint the mask for the longest time and then finally did.
The thing with Gerber to me is they just seem so, I don't know, like anti-starstruck. The guy just has problem after problem. It seems like ever since Cam Ward took over for him in Carolina, that he just doesn't have any self-esteem that's sustainable at this point. It's almost like here's a guy who, he was a number one goaltender in the NHL. There you can't argue that, but then it just seemed to really go to hell for him.
He's been usurped by pretty much every goaltender who's ever played behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Cam Ward in Carolina, as you said, and then in Ottawa, Ray Emery.
Mm-hmm.
And then Emery gets hurt, like we said, and Gerber comes in and is the hero.
Mm-hmm.
Emery comes back, and they have another little hissy fight back and forth. And once again, Gerber falls out of favor. Eventually, Emery is ejected, and Gerber's once again handed the number one spot.
Mm-hmm.
And because we don't have any other goalies in the system, they went ahead and signed journeyman Alex Auld. And there was a poll on one of the Senators' blogs before the season began of how long do you think it will take before Alex Auld will usurp Martin Gerber as the number one goaltender? And the earliest vote was for December, and a lot of the write-ins were before December. He took the job before December.
Yeah.
And then Gerber's sitting on the bench, and he's being a grumpy guy again. And so they send him down to the minors because he gets his job taken, and Alex Auld's job as well, by rookie goaltender Brian Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gerber's in the AHL, pout, pout, pout. Although apparently he was being a good sport about the whole thing.
Wow.
Respectful. And he gets signed, or not signed, he gets picked up off waivers by Toronto. And the first thing that he gets asked when he's in the dressing room is, how does he feel to no longer be in Ottawa? And he replies with something along the lines of, that is in the past. I don't want to talk about that. Let's just talk about the now. And from that point on, refused to talk at all about his time in Ottawa.
Well, do you blame him?
Absolutely not. I should note that the team that went 15-2 with Gerber only made the playoffs because on the last day of the season, Boston lost a game. And so they got in by default. That team tanked so hard, and there were so many problems that, yeah, if I'm Gerber, I'm a little pouty. Well, after the end of that season, Gerber didn't have a job. And Ray Emery, who was playing for Atlante over in the KHL, he moved back overseas, back to North America, to play for Philadelphia, where he later got injured. And so Gerber went and took Emery's job in the KHL, same team. Injured his back. Pretty heavily, actually. And now, apparently, signs with Edmonton.
Yeah.
To be their number 3/4 goalie.
Well, we'll see what... and that's the thing. I mean, there's enough questions. Well, A, there's the question of what's going to happen to Hobby Bolin, because Hobby Bolin is still essentially on the hook for what looks like either a DUI or... I mean, it's not... Yeah, what sounds like a grievous DUI.
The term is actually, I read up on this today, extreme DUI.
Extreme DUI. It sounds like an X Games sport. it's like how can you do when you have this many shots of Jägermeister and now you're going to jump this motorcycle and see what trick actually happens?
It might have well have been. His blood alcohol content level was 0.16, and he was going 70 in a 45.
In a Lamborghini, right?
I believe a Lamborghini.
It was some kind of
I'm a rich guy car.
Some kind of rich guy and having a midlife crisis kind of car.
And so now he's waiting for a trial.
Right.
It's being held at the end of August. And if he's found guilty, then he will face a minimum of 30 days in prison.
Right.
And the county he's in is known for Tent City as the prison. It's an extremely hardcore prison, considering that it's for people who commit lighter crimes.
Right.
It's basically a bunch of army tents, and the inmates have to live outside underneath these tents, fed expired foodstuffs and that sort of thing. It's been the recipient of many, 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 many complaints over the years, but the sheriff's pretty intense about it. But because that's the county where he had his extreme DUI, that's where he'd end up.
See, one of the problems with all of this, I actually haven't heard anybody talk about yet, is that Canada really isn't big on letting DUI offenders into their country if they aren't a Canadian citizen. So, not that they're big on Canadian citizens and DUIs, but if you try to come into Canada with a DUI on your record, and you haven't gone through, you know, sometimes they won't let you in at all. And then there's also something called a Queen's Pardon that you have to do all the paperwork and basically kind of buy your way out of, out of the issue, buy your way into Canada.
God bless the Queen.
Exactly. And, the thing is that nobody, what happens? He's not a Canadian citizen. He would have a DUI on his record. Would Canada even let him in? I mean, and if they did, what kind of, would would that be special treatment? You know, it sounds pretty sticky, even beyond all of this, you know, even beyond the just the DUI itself. There could be other issues going on.
There could be a number of other issues. I can't say for certain whether or not he'd be allowed in the country. I assume he would be. He's employed by a Canadian company, and mm-hmm. it's not like athletes are never allowed to bend the rules a little bit when right. it comes to the law. But reading here, the extreme DUIs carry a mandatory minimum of 30 days in jail, maximum 6 months, alcohol counseling, an interlock device placed on the vehicle for 1 year, fines, probation, and a 90-day suspended driver's license.
Mm-hmm. Which and by the way, maybe, you're reading that from where?
Copper and Blue, by a post by Derek Zona.
Thank you. We like to cite references here on the rink, and keep that web page up so I can actually put a link on the site, which of course is at www.rinkpodcast.com. Anyways, we want to be good new media people, and that means citing, linking, stuff like that.
Everybody be social now.
Exactly. So anyways, they're kind of in the goalie go round. I remember reading on Twitter from an AHL hockey writer saying, well, you know, the Gerber signing also helps Oklahoma City, which is the new the Oklahoma City Barons is the new AHL team for the Oilers, who finally seem to be actually taking the farm system seriously, which they haven't for years. But they didn't have any goalies down there. So at least Gerber is an addition to what's going on. It's, you know, how many goaltending prospects they actually have that are worth any salt at all?
Well, I know they drafted a guy a couple of years ago, Olivier Waugh. Mm. But beyond that, the system was initially in place to have two main prospects be in there. And that would be Jeff Drouin-Delorier, or JDD.
Right.
And the other being Devin Dubnyk. And the thought was, okay, we'll bring up JDD for 1 year. And they had this three-headed goalie monster of Dwayne Rolison and Matthew Garrel and Jeff Delorier.
JDD, yeah.
And they were all on one-way contracts. And this was a big issue. And this is why Garrel got shipped out of town. And one reason why Rolison was a little annoyed for quite a while, mm-hmm. although that's not why he left the team in free agency. It's because he got a longer deal in Long Island. So last year, they thought they had it taken care of. They got Habby Boulin. He's on a one-way. They have JDD. He's on a one-way. Okay, problem solved. You got your two goalies. Mm-hmm. Habby Boulin goes and injures his back. Dubnyk is pressed into being able to be the backup now. And he and JDD are running the show for the entire season because right. Habby Boulin's injured.
Which we know how that wound up, which is a first round, you know, a number one overall draft pick, which, yeah, was not good.
The fall for Taylor Hall. Mm-hmm. Well, problem is, Dubnyk was up for a new contract this year. So they signed him to one, and it's a one-way deal. So, again, Derek Zona of Copper and Blue had an interesting proposition about whether or not the Oilers could void Habby Boulin's contract because of a clause that effectively says that he's, you know, not representing the team in the best means possible.
Right.
It's a touchy thing, but if found guilty of the DUI, then there's a very good chance that he will miss actually parts of the regular season. He's definitely going to miss most of training camp if he's found guilty. So there's a chance they might be able to void his deal, in which case they would then only have two goalies.
Right.
That were on one-way deals. And that would be the same guys as last year, JDD and Devin Dubnyk. So Gerber comes in at league minimum, $500,000. And it's a two-way deal for 1 year, $200,000 if he's in the minors. So if he's in the minors, he's being fairly well.
Right. He's being better compensated than a lot of people in the minors are.
He is, but he also made $700,000 last year in the KHL without taxes. But obviously, he's trying to make some kind of North American return. I guess the KHL didn't sit well with him. So technically, he's the number three or four goalie, but he has a very good chance of coming up and then possibly usurping some of these players, these other goalies, and potentially becoming the number one. Unfortunately, being Gerber, that means he will probably also then falter the moment that there is pressure behind him. And he'll be back and forth for a while. It's just nobody expected him to get signed. I don't even think most people in North America even knew that he was a free agent.
Right.
Or that he was available or that he had an out. So this kind of came out of the blue.
I think, well, you know, of course, there is no real agreement between the KHL and the NHL of the handshake saying don't poach our people. So, you know, that's and that's been respected about as much as, well, not much, actually. So, you know, if the KHL is anything like and you know, with all due respect to Dmitry Chesnikov, if the KHL is anything like what Laura Sullivan described in Away Games, which is actually a fantastic book about following players, NHL players around the around during the lockout, following them around Europe. You know, I could imagine that the KHL wouldn't sit well with a lot of people. And that's not, you know, that's not a slam on them. It's just that there are differences between the NHL game and, you know, and the NHL, I guess, lifestyle versus what the KHL has to offer. You know, obviously it's, you know, for you and I, that's speculation, but, you know. So Gerber's back. And Edmonton thinks that at least, I mean, obviously Edmonton doesn't think that's a solution, but maybe just a backup plan.
It's a 1-year Band-Aid.
Yeah.
Really, until, I don't know, maybe Olivier Waugh comes up and is good.
No relation to Patrick Waugh.
Absolutely not. Okay. Or if it is, nobody's letting anybody else know about that.
I would think that people would be all over that if that were the case.
I would think so. He did come from Quebec, but then the Waugh surname.
Right.
But I haven't heard anything actually about him since he was drafted. And that goes to show that there's really not a whole lot in the Edmonton system.
Which, yeah, pretty much I think everybody knew anyways, because they've been letting people go left and right. There's been a lot of issues in Edmonton with people not wanting to be there. And then on top of that, not really having much of a farm system. I remember a few years ago in the AHL, they were pretty much spread out across 4 or 5 teams. And that's really, you know, I've said it before, and I've said it about the Colorado Avalanche also, that if you don't take the minor league system seriously in this day and age, you're going to get hosed, and you're going to get hosed long term. And as soon as you run into problems like what Chicago ran into, or even what the Colorado Avalanche ran into during the the very first year of the lockout, where all of a sudden there was money being thrown around and greener pastures, and you know, you're going to get caught with your pants down. And I think that's where the Oilers kind of sit right now.
One of the big problems the Oilers have had developmentally as well is that they have done nothing but draft really small guys. And so for a while they could, right after the lockout, they got Chris Pronger and picked up a few other pieces, and they snuck into the playoffs and then pulled off one of those storybook runs where guys who would score 10 goals in the regular season in 82 games would get, you know, 14 in a playoff run. And after that, it was exposed pretty heavily that the team that they ran with to the finals was not nearly as good as people thought they were. And since then, they've been in a downward spiral, making some really, really awful trades. Like, trade Ryan Smith over to Long Island, and one of the players you get back for him, you've now already bought out.
Right.
Or they take an asset like Joni Pitkinen, and then they trade him to Philadelphia, get a guy back, trade again, and eventually they're left with another buyout.
Right.
In this case being Patrick O'Sullivan.
Which is something that Atlanta seems to be good at these days, but not what you expect from the Edmonton Oilers.
Atlanta's good with the buyouts?
Well, they look at what they did with Donald Brashear.
That was the Rangers.
Right. The Rangers traded to Atlanta.
Oh, right.
And then Atlanta promptly bought out Brashear, which, you know, is a bearing of bad salary, and B, probably just, you know, the Atlanta got two players back, and one of them being Brashear, and then immediately bought him out. So it was probably a handshake deal that, you know what, you're going to take this guy off our hands if you want to get this guy too. That's my guess, at least. I can't imagine that Atlanta would be too happy with, you know, continuing to be where salary goes to die.
Well, I just opened up CapGeek and looked at Atlanta's roster, and sure enough, there he is, Donald Brashear, a $1.4 million cap hit for the buyout alone.
I saw Donald Brashear play in Hartford, the Hartford Wolfpack, this past season when they sent him down to the minors. And I'll say this about Donald Brashear. He was engaged. He was engaged in the game. He was working hard out there. You know, I mean, it's not, you know, some people would get sent down and just, you know, absolutely phone in and not care. And he knew that his days were done with the Rangers. But he was still out there playing hard, you know, as hard as he can. He's not a young man. He's just not. As you and I both go to our computers to take a look at how old he is.
Let me know if you find it, because, oh, you're right, he's not. He's 38.
38 years old.
So definitely the twilight of his career.
Well, and that means that he was signed in as an after 35, over 35 player, which means that the salary's on the books or you buy it out. So they couldn't just, yeah.
I knew that seemed a little high. That explains that.
Anyways, the goalies obviously do not stop there with Gerber. There is the whole Turco Niemi. I don't know if I'd call it a situation anymore because, you know, it's pretty much found its resolution. But Niemi, Antti Niemi of the Chicago Blackhawks, of course, takes the team to arbitration. And you could say he wins, but at the same time, from what it sounds like, the team and he were pretty much about $3 million apart from each other, and the arbitrator found right down the middle. So it's hard to say that anybody actually won and anybody actually lost. And then the Blackhawks have to walk away from him and pick up Marty Turco for a year at $1 million less than, you know, a cap savings of $1 million, basically.
I was going to correct you on that. Turco's is $1.3 million. Niemi's was 2.75.
Oh. Really? It was 1.3? I thought it was 1.75.
No, well, again, according to CapGeek, 1.3 and a no movement clause.
Well,
for his 1 year.
They won't be able to move him anyways because of Marty Turco. No, and that's kind of unfair of me to say anyways. That's, you know, he's Marty Turco has been around the block. He's a, you know, he's got a style and he also is a he's a puck mover. You know, and look at Dallas's defense last year. It certainly wasn't Dallas's defense of previous years, you know. So he didn't have as good a team in front of him. And, you know, he's still Marty Turco. Yes, he's got his issues, but then again, show me a goalie that doesn't.
Turco amuses me in that he's going to Chicago. Uh-huh. And this is a team that is very much a forward attack team, even with all the players that have been now cast to the wayside or mm-hmm. cast to Atlanta. He's one of the guys where the trapezoid was there for him to actually reduce his goals against average because he's a great puck mover.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, if he goes into the corner, he's probably going to cough up the puck half the time and it's going to end up in his mm-hmm. own net. And I'm not sure how a Marty Turco, who is going to try to pull off moves like that with that team, I'm not so sure he's going to do that well.
Mm.
But then again, a year ago, you and I were talking and I had looked at a couple games that Jimmy Howard had played with Detroit, and I ripped him a new one,
mm-hmm.
and he went on to be a Calder finalist. So maybe I'm not the best judge of that per se, but personally, I don't think Turco's an upgrade on Niemi at all.
Right.
I think he's at the right price for Chicago.
Well, I mean, he's priced out as a not an upgrade also, you know. That's the thing.
But they are going to be much, 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 much cheaper this year than they were last year. Well, Cristobal mm-hmm. Huey's contract is technically still on the team.
Technically, he's still there. He's going to be riding the pine. I mean, he's there. Chicago, I think, is going to be looking at Cristobal Huey to actually perform this year. I mean, he's it's kind of like the second year that that Budai and Teodor, and yes, we'll get to Budai in a minute, that Peter Budai and Jose Teodor were playing in Chicago, and everybody expected Teodor to basically be on the bench. But then again, it's really hard to sit that much money every, you know, as much as, you know, for instance, he had before. And it's going to be hard for Chicago to sit $5.6 million night after night and put that into a backup role. They're going to try. They're going to give him his shot.
I honestly don't think so. Recent comments from general manager seem to lean towards Corey Crawford, who's been in the AHL with Rockford for the mm-hmm. longest time, that he's going to get his shot. And Huey's agent has been fairly upfront in saying that, you know what, we're talking to the team, and whether it's finding an AHL solution or a trade or possibly going to Europe mm-hmm. as a way to get him off, they're trying to find a way to make a resolution that's happy for everybody.
See, and Corey Crawford, though, he's had his shots. It's not like Corey Crawford has never been... please, click away. it's not like Corey Crawford has not been in the NHL. It's not like Corey Crawford has not played NHL games. He's had shots. He's not, you know, he's not ready to be, you know, Robert Esched out. But at the same time, you know, he's had shots.
He's had shots in little bits and pieces here and there. But yeah, you're right. He has been called up several times.
Mm-hmm. With several different teams.
Actually, all Chicago.
All Chicago?
All Chicago.
I thought he played for another team.
No, he played for Norfolk in the AHL, and then Rockford. They swapped firm teams, as everybody seems to do in the AHL.
All right. Well, okay. In fairness, he has only had eight NHL games, and it looks like...
And yet I seem to be able to recall at least three of them.
And it looks like three of them were in relief, because he's got a 1-3-1 record. Let me tell you something. Neil Little of the Philadelphia Phantoms only got two games in the NHL. I saw the second one, and it was his last game in the NHL.
I saw Robert Esch.
I've seen Robert Esch. I saw Robert Esch get injured, and Neil Little came in, and then Nidimaki was the next. Yeah, Nidimaki came in.
Way to tie that all together.
Dude, I could... do I need to keep going? Because I can round and round this one. Yep. He had a... poor Neil Little. His one NHL game that I saw against Tampa Bay. Two goals against, which he lost the game, which meant a .750 save percentage, because everybody went into defensive mode. As soon as he let in like two goals in the first minute and a half, and that was his last NHL game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Poor guy. And he was loved. He was loved in the city of Philadelphia, especially he's in the Phantoms Hall of Fame. He's the man. I swear. There is a great video, and I'll have to try and remember to put this on the site, of Neil Little. There's a fight and a big pile up, and Neil Little skates the length of the ice and dog piles on top, literally jumps and flips over the entire group. It's not safe. It is totally dangerous, and it is absolutely hilarious. I've got to try and remember to put that on the site.
You like goalies to do that sort of thing.
Tim Thomas checking, you know, I don't think that Tim Thomas's fall from grace would have been quite as dramatic if he hadn't actually, you know, checked. Who was it? Who did he check with the at the Winter Classic? Was it
Scott Hartnell? And he let in a goal.
Yeah, exactly. And if it hadn't let in a goal, he probably wouldn't have been as vilified afterwards. And you know, he still won the game. He got one goal against is because he checked a guy. Come on.
Which is actually one of the most iconic images of it too. Thankfully.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could see him shoving Hartnell and the puck going in with all the lights. And
that was the most boring first 57 minutes of hockey I have seen in a very long time. And that's saying something, because I've seen some boring games.
I got nothing to add.
You got nothing on that. Okay. So look.
I have two.
So here's my opinion on the Niemi thing is that if you're Antti Niemi and you just won a cup and you're going to fit, you know, you're kind of expected to fit within the salary structure of the team, and they're going to offer you a $1.5 million 1 year contract with maybe promises later down the road of more, you know, maybe, because, you know, that's a handshake. That's not guaranteed. Mm-hmm. I think you have to take the team to arbitration, especially if you're going to have like $5.6 million sitting on the bench and you're going to be expected to shoulder the load. I think you kind of have to force them into a choice. How much of a hometown discount can you give at that point? I mean, look, I won you a Stanley Cup ring. I won you the cup. And, you know, there's no guarantee. I don't know if you heard this. I don't know if you heard about this story at all or not, but the Miami Heat, the basketball team that, mm-hmm. that LeBron James went to, sold out their season tickets. So they fired their entire their ticket sales staff, their season ticket sales staff.
We're done. Move on.
We're done. We don't need you anymore. So that, and which they were, they didn't have anything else to sell, but sports franchises do not have loyalty. It's not about loyalty with these guys. Most of the time it's about who can get me there right now. You know, I mean, there is some loyalty out there. I mean, there are some teams, you know, I mean, Timu Solani is an unusual case, and you know, with the Ducks, he pretty much has a lifetime contract. But, you know, would that have happened if he hadn't had his knee scoped during the lockout? You know, who I still contend has, you know, was the person that the lockout benefited absolutely the most. I don't, mm-hmm. you know, other than maybe Todd Bertuzzi, because he got to spend a lot of his, you know, his time being suspended during that.
I'm but so anyways. Happy he plays for Detroit. It makes him so much easier to hate. Yeah. Which leads me to, again, back to this, loyalty, Mike Modano.
Mm. Well, we'll get to Modano okay, in just we'll a get second. Let's stay with Niemi for just a moment.
I was trying to follow your segue.
No, I hear you. I'm not ready to segue out just yet. I know. I kind of, right, you know, I'm leaning that way.
Let's circle back to Niemi.
So Niemi. You know, I mean, how do you feel about it? I mean, he went to arbitration. He knew that you had to know that he wasn't going to be, you know, I mean, was it just a force of the hand? Was it, you know, I mean, how do you feel about it?
I think he had every right to go to arbitration. Mm-hmm. And given the way that the team has had to play hardball with the fact that they just don't have money and dump it and everything, it's either you take a deal at $1 million a year or you take a chance and try to go for something higher. And the arbitrator will either give you exactly what you want or less than. But if the Blackhawks are sitting there going, okay, if he gets a reward of 1.5 or higher, we'll go Turco. Mm. But if he gets lower, we'll go Niemi. And let's say the Hawks are saying, okay, we're going to shoot for $1 million in arbitration. Niemi wants more than that. So if the Hawks are only offering $1 million, the only way Niemi's going to get more than that is if he goes to arbitration. So it's a gambit. And in this case, he won out as far as the amount of money he got, but he lost out, period. And I guess if – I'm not sure what his end game is right now. Yeah. Why – it's his right to go to arbitration, and he exercised it, and he got a pretty sizable reward considering he only had 1 year, really, at the NHL level. And now he doesn't have a team. And he's part of the biggest glut of goalies that are roughly his skill level who don't have jobs. And so what is he going to do now? And that part doesn't make sense to me. I understand him mm-hmm. wanting to get more money, and I think he deserved it. You and I were both at Blackhawks games during the playoffs, and he mm-hmm. was, you know, he was better than people were giving him credit for early right. on. So he definitely warranted more than the $1 million a year that he may have been able to get. But now what? He's sitting there with a group that includes Jose Theodore and, well, a whole bunch of other people Nabokov left for the KHL.
Right, already. Which really helped, you know, helped everybody out in a way. Well, I mean, it did. I mean, that's another job. I mean, there's basically 60 jobs, you know, and actually probably 90 jobs because you need your third. Mm-hmm. But realistically in the NHL, there's 60 jobs. And you know, I mean, Jose Theodore is probably finally coming to the conclusion that, hey, he's not in the top 30, you know, for those gigs. He's not a starter at this point, or won't be considered a starter unless he proves something again. So Nabokov leaving really is, you know, it helps a lot of people out.
Well, it certainly helped Hentaro Nidmaki out, who
right.
managed to score a nice little job in San Jose.
Which I think would be actually hilarious if San Jose went after Niemi, because essentially what we're looking at here is the Halmerson, Hammerlammer Ding Dong.
Super Nintendo Jalmerson.
What was that?
Super Nintendo Jalmerson.
Nice. You know, if it weren't for the offer sheet for him, then you could probably, you know, they probably would have had the money for Niemi. So the Sharks offer get the offer sheet in there, and then Chicago matches and gets to keep, and then, you know, and imagine if now San Jose stepped in and tried to get Niemi, and that actually wouldn't be a bad tandem, Niemi and Nidamaki. At this point, because, you know, there's still quite – I think there's still questions in goal for San Jose with the backup.
They would definitely be the number two set or pairing for Team Finland after Backstrom and Kiprusoff.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd have little Finland there. I actually feel really sorry for Thomas Greiss, because I read a little thing on him recently where he was saying how excited and happy he was. It's the first summer that he stayed in North America to train, and he's been training with the Sharks, and he was like, Joe Pavelski's coming in, and this is great. So if Niemi gets signed, and you got Niemi, Nidamaki, and Greiss is the odd man out, which seems to be kind of the trend right now, is before it used to be everybody tried to get a starter, and then everybody struggled to get a decent backup.
Right.
And some teams just really could not do that. And some teams could afford to not do that. New Jersey could, for the longest time, afford to take anybody they wanted to put them in the backup role. Now, like you said, there's 60, maybe 90 jobs open, and probably about 100, 120 qualified mm-hmm. players to take those jobs.
Right.
And so there are players like Niemi who are now without a job. And you said Sharks, San Jose, I could see that.
Yeah.
It would definitely be a nice departure from Nabokov to actually have two completely, you know, capable starters, even 1A, 1B, who could get you several wins throughout the year. And really, I mean, the playoffs for the Sharks the last couple of years, if Nabokov can't pull it off, and often he can't, who do you turn to? Going to knock on Thomas Greiss again. Not really the most capable backup. He certainly did not impress with Germany during the Olympics.
Well, and that's the problem with Greiss, is that all anybody has ever seen of the guy was during the Olympics. And you know, it wasn't a meltdown of Nabokov proportions, and yet it still didn't look good. Not like, you know, I mean, who did Germany play when near the end? They did play Canada, didn't they?
They did play Canada, I believe.
And of course, obviously, that didn't go so well. But, you know, what are you going to do? It's Germany. Remember, wasn't Ole Kolzig was like the biggest name that Germany had for years?
The biggest name that Germany had, and he was from South Africa.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not, you know, I mean, it's not like he had a lot of team in front of him. And yet at the same time, everybody looks at the Swiss team and then goes, hey, well, if the Swiss can do it. Yeah, but the Swiss team is, you know, the Swiss were pretty impressive.
The Swiss have been getting better and better and better. Oh. And the thing is, Switzerland can beat a number of teams, but the one they can really take to task is Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And they always do it with a different goalie.
Yes.
They've done it with Abisher. They've done it with Gerber.
Yep.
Go back to him. He's the guy who put together a 50 to 52 save shutout back in Turin. And then this year, Jonas Hiller. Switzerland actually now has a better program in front of them. Germany, not so much. But whereas before, Swiss goalies could occasionally bail out their team, Greiss isn't helping the Germans any when Kolzig could. So I honestly see Greiss as not being anywhere near as good as people seem to think he's going to be.
Hmm.
And I think I'm with you. I think Niemi would actually be a really good fit there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there's still plenty of time before the season starts, and obviously Niemi's going to be around. I think he's going to find somewhere to land. Heck, he might even land with the Islanders. You know, I mean, seriously, there's enough three-headed goalie questions there last year that they needed it, that they needed the three-headed goalie monster.
I don't even know if DiPietro's healthy at all.
I don't think DiPietro knows if DiPietro's healthy. You know, it's just, yeah, he's just, yeah. I know that you want to talk Jose Tater, Peter Budaj a little bit. I know that you want to talk about Mike Modano and the Wings, but we're going to refresh our beer. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to have more with Ryan Classic on the rink in just a moment. Ryan and I went from a short break to refresh our beers to a long conversation that you're going to have to wait for till episode 64, part 2. You can always find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can subscribe in iTunes or comment about anything that you heard here. You can email us at rink@rinkpodcast.com, or you can call us at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. Ryan can be found on Twitter at RyanClassic. Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink. We'll see you for part 2.